Mr. Peel is a new member to the city council, new member to the town. He is a child dentist, and he's kind of new to the area.
Did you just say a child dentist?
Well, he's not a child, but he's mostly focused on children. Everyone, and welcome back to No Script, an unscripted conversation about theater's best scripts. I'm Jackson, that's Jacob, and we are coming back to you again with another great script, another full-length script. We're only a couple weeks past our themed month, and excited to have the chance to chat about the script with you here today.
Yeah, today we're talking about a really, really funny play, a procedural play, a play about politics, a play about town life, about history and myth-making and storytelling. And it's also a play by one of the American playwrights that is, I mean, he's just writing plays all the time. And every play that Tracy Letts writes, to me, is amazing. I love Tracy Letts. I mean, you probably know him best out there in podcast land from August Osage County. But Tracy Letts also, we've discussed on this podcast, also Superior Donuts. He's got a whole great library of plays besides, and an incredible acting career besides. And this play, those two intersect in a fun way, which we'll talk about in the context section. I don't know how we're going to talk about this play, but this is just a really cool, awesome script. I've become kind of obsessed with it since picking it up for the podcast. Really fun. Today is The Minutes, a play by Tracy Letts.
Yeah, The Minutes by Tracy Letts. It's exciting to have the chance to chat about it. This is one of those plays that sort of survived the bubble of the COVID shutdown and has some really interesting things to say about when it was written and also applied to when it actually was on Broadway. So excited for the conversation about that. But also just the way that this play is really critique-y, but in like the great theatery way of being like comedic critique-y, while also like being able to pull in the unexpected punches to get you in the gut when you're not expecting it. So yeah, lots of great stuff in this play. I agree that there's like a how do we talk about this kind of play, because it's got some great unity to it, unity of time, unity of place, unity. So yeah,
sort of.
There is a little bit, I guess. Yeah, that's true.
The vast majority of it does. There's one bit at the end, but yeah, it's you're right that it's critique-y. It's comedic. It probably walks the line of satire.
Yeah.
I don't think that it really is, and thinking about it as satire is probably not the right way to approach the script. I don't know. You'd have to ask Tracy, but it's more like real than satire is, it feels to me. Like, I was going to save it for the context section, but I'll just do it now because it's so cool. If you listen to interviews with Tracy Letts about The Minutes, one of the things he always says, it seems like it's sort of like one of his talking points when he does any interviews, he always makes the same joke about it too, which is funny. But he talks about how he listened to hundreds of hours, that may be an exaggeration, but many, many, many hours of actual city council meetings in order to write this script that are just available on YouTube. And that a lot of the material of the script really does come out of these city council meetings, to the point where some of the script is verbatim. And some of the script has taken story points from that. For example, and we'll talk more about this when we get to your synopsis, but the whole plot line of the stolen bicycles is directly out of a city council meeting that he watched and listened to. And so satire, like in general, maybe this is not true, but it to me, it feels like it's a little less connected with reality than this script actually is. This is more like dark comedy with something to say.
Yeah, like deeply real, like stuff in it from real life and things. But then, like, every once in a while, it dabbles in the surreal slash little bit. So I'm excited to be able to chat about it because there's all sorts of great ways that there's like intersections across all of these different forms in here.
Just so cool. I'd love to do it someday. It quickly was put onto my, like, should do this play list.
Yeah.
Before we get to any more of the conversation, we should ask you, as we always do, to consider heading on over to our Patreon page. Patreon is how we fund this podcast. We love to do it. It's a great thing for us to do. It's just that it's not free, and even if it was, like, free monetarily, it takes so much time to do that it just would not be practical for Jackson and I to really make a part of our lives if it weren't for the people supporting us on Patreon. So to those folks, big thank you. You are what make this podcast able to happen in a very real way. And so big thank you to you. If that's not you yet, we're going to ask you to just think about it. Go check out the Patreon page. See what you like. See what would work for you. It's a tiered system if you know Patreon, so you sign up to do like a certain money amount every month. The lowest tier is just $1 a month. That's $12 over the course of the year. Even that, hugely valuable to us, so please consider it. I think a lot of people out there can afford $12 in the course of a whole year. Probably a lot of you are paying $12 a month for like 5 different streaming services. So just think about this as like way less than that, and maybe that will help you get over there. So please think about it. It's what makes the podcast able to happen. There's different, you know, rewards and all that kind of stuff that you can check out over there. The big thing is that we want to say thank you to those folks who are supporting us. You make the show happen. Check us out, patreon.com/noscriptpodcast. That's all one word, no hyphens, no underscores. patreon.com/noscriptpodcast, and we'll see you over there.
Yeah, thank you all so much for helping out the show. It's great to have you on board and to have the chance to hang out with you over there as well. We'll see you over on Patreon.
And now, back to the script.
Here we go.
Okay, so we've talked about Tracy Letts a couple times before, so no big authorial introduction this time around. One thing I will say, we've come across this problem before on the podcast, and we've just sort of taken a stance on what this podcast is. And so we're here again, which is that part of this play is like a twist, is like a reveal, is like a secret that is hidden. In fact, some of what the play is that you don't quite know what you're walking into when you walk into it. And so in the interviews, in the marketing that surrounded the original Steppenwolf production, that surrounded the Broadway production, there is some secrecy. And in fact, the interviewers even reference it often. Like, and we're not going to talk about a lot of what happens in this play because it's a secret. So the interviews tend to focus more around like the actors' lives and stuff because they're trying to sort of maintain a little bit of a veil around what actually goes on in this play. All credit to that, but that's not really what this podcast is. We're not like a reviewer of live productions. We don't review the scripts. We don't interview the cast members. We're a podcast that talks about plays in a technical, in a thematic, in a storytelling way. And that's not possible for us to do, maintaining the sort of secrecy around the play. So all that to say, this podcast always has spoilers, and it's going to today. And it might be a little more spoily today than for other scripts. And so if you have the opportunity to see the minutes coming up, or if you want to read the minutes after you've heard us talk a little bit about it so far, my suggestion probably is that you stop listening to this podcast right now and come back later, because that you're going to have the sort of thing that happens that is what this play is spoiled over the course of our conversation. So just heads up on that. We don't do no spoilers for this podcast. It doesn't make sense.
Right. Truly. We just wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. So heads up on that. You've been warned. The Minutes is a play that premiered at Steppenwolf Theater. If that sounds like a big deal to you, it's because it is. Tracy Letts is a big-time dude. And he's an ensemble member at Steppenwolf, so a lot of his stuff gets done there. And when he writes a new play, places like Steppenwolf want to premiere it. And so that is what happened. Anna Shapiro directed it. Anna Shapiro is, I mean, legendary. In fact, a lot of the interviews talk some about like what it's like to work with her as much as with Tracy Letts. So if you're interested in working theater artists today, Anna Shapiro, director, somebody that you might want to check out. So that was in 2017. This play was actually written prior to Trump being elected. And that is notable because the play is about politics in some ways. And it's actually been credited, as it's had this whole life, I guess more than 8 years now, of how applicable the sort of view into the political landscape is. It's sort of hard to remember, Jackson, what life was like before Trump got elected. And that's not to make this whole thing about that. What, regardless of which side of the aisle you fall on, things changed when Trump got elected. For better or for worse, whatever your view out there is, something changed. And it's sort of hard to remember what it was like before. But for this script to come out of, quote unquote, what it was like before and how clearly, Tracy Letts can see into our political landscape now from back then when everything was different. We've had Trump, we've had the COVID pandemic, we're about to have Trump elections again. I mean, things are just like, it feels so different. And yet, the play sees into that landscape so sharply. It's been noted for that many times. So it premieres in 2017 at Steppenwolf Theater. And quickly, that production is going to be transferred to Broadway because it's incredible. And the ensemble is going to perform at the James Earl Jones Theater in New York City. They are scheduled to open, dun, 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 actually it's to start previews, but I don't want to take away from the effect, dun, 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 in February, late February 2020. Everybody put your thinking caps on. Late February 2020 is when they're scheduled to begin previews. But what happens? The COVID pandemic happens and theater shuts down. So the production is suspended. The production is then remounted at Studio 54, I think, in New York City on Broadway in April of 2022 is when it finally gets its sort of its Broadway opening. Interestingly, Tracy Letts is in that production, wasn't in the original Steppenwolf one, but was in the Broadway run of his own play, playing the mayor. It's not even like a bit part, the mayor.
Right.
on Broadway. Very, very cool. I mean, that's awesome. And so a successful Broadway run, nominated for a Tony Award for Best Play, nominated for a whole bunch of Outer Circle Critics Awards. And then it's just sort of getting its feet on the ground in places outside of Broadway. I mean, to have a Broadway run only 2 years ago is still very recent. But places like the Curious Theater Company in Denver did it in 2023. Earlier this year, the Albany Civic Center did it in February, March 2024, just closed or maybe extended at the point of this recording. We don't know whether it'll be extended or not, but the Boston premiere of the show at Main Stage Theater 144 is running at the time of this recording and maybe will have closed or not closed by the time you hear this podcast. This play was also noted, and this is the last thing I'll say context section-wise, as a finalist for the 2018 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. Tracy Letts' plays are sort of always in that Pulitzer Prize conversation because of how stinking good they are. But listen to this particular year of the Pulitzer Prize. The play that won, Cost of Living by Martina Mayoc. I mean, legendary. It will go on to be one of the plays that we look back on. Legendary. Also nominated, Everybody by Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, which is, you know, contemporary adaptation of Everyman. Incredible. Will go on to be looked back on. And then this play by Tracy Letts. I mean, Tracy Letts, Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, and Martina Mayoc were the finalists. Those are three of, like, the playwrights that define what American drama is.
Yeah.
Like, that year really encapsulates where American drama is, how strong it is right now. I mean, how could you pick between those three plays?
Yeah.
I don't envy that committee. I would have given them all the award.
We're giving out three this year. Yeah. Yeah, what a stacked year, and what and definitely like earned company between them all. So yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
How could you even be mad about losing that? And losing, we've talked before about like what does it mean to lose if you're a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize? Still a huge deal. It's like on all the scripts that you print. But like, how could you be mad? It's like, well, it'll be me, or it'll be Martina, or it'll be Brandon Jacob Jenkins. One of us three probably deserves it.
This is a cool table I get to sit at. yeah, for sure. So we're going to jump into the conversation around this play in just a moment. I'm going to give you just a brief synopsis of this play here.
Spoilers.
Remember spoilers.
This is your moment to come back later if you don't want to know the secret of this play.
Last chance, and it's passed. So we're going to... So this play takes place at a city council meeting room, it kind of takes place around the 10-ish or so characters, 10 or 11 characters, who are on the city council. Now, the main character that we kind of follow through the sort of stranger who comes to town is Mr. Peel. Now, Mr. Peel is a new member to the city council, new member to the town. He's a child dentist, and he's kind of new to the area.
Did you just say a child dentist?
Well, he's not a child, but he's mostly focused on children.
He's a pediatric. That's more typically what you would
pediatric
say.
Dentist, whatever.
Child dentist is like is like 9 and doing dental
like a prodigy. Anyway, but notably, in addition to his being very new to the city council, he was gone last week. At the last meeting of the city council, he was out of town because his mother passed away somewhat unexpectedly, and he was away. And so he doesn't know what happened. He's kind of crashing back in straight from being gone and isn't aware what happened last week. And the first hint that something happened last week is a conversation that he has with a number of different people, but certainly with Miss Johnson, who is the clerk of the council, with Mayor Superba, who is the mayor. But he starts to figure out that Mr. Karp is missing this week. And not just missing, it quickly comes out that Mr. Karp is no longer on the city council. And he's kind of met with some obfuscation from everyone as to why exactly that is. People are reticent to talk about it. Some of it is sort of jokingly said, but others are like, well, you were out of town, so just wait for the minutes and you'll be able to catch up, whatever. I'm not going to take the time to get you up to speed. Why should I take the time to get you up to speed when it was your fault that you were out of town? Well, when the minutes come around to being approved, they're not approving the minutes from the last meeting. They're approving the minutes from the meeting 2 weeks before. That's kind of odd to Mr. Peel. And he kind of focuses on that for a little while, tries to ascertain what's going on. There's some very comedic but also frustrating back and forth between everyone around, like, well, it's not that the minutes are delayed, it's that they're not ready. They're just not written yet. Don't worry about it. As soon as they're ready, they will be out. It's just they're delayed. Don't worry about it. And kind of this don't worry about it gets repeated and repeated often. Then all sorts of different presentations begin to emerge from different people. Miss Innes brings this sort of like conduct sort of letter that she's written to the council about like all her years on the council, etc. And you just start to get the sense that they've been through something last week. There's another motion that's brought forward by Mr. Hanrady, who is talking about the kind of the fountain in town and its accessibility. He's big on accessibility for people who are in wheelchairs or just trying to see the fountain itself. And so he's trying to kind of get this motion through. Mr. Peel tries to join him in that. Everyone else is against it, and they move on. And then we get into a presentation by Mr. Blake, who is focused on this Abraham Lincoln event, fight Abraham Lincoln or something like that. he wants it to be a part of their upcoming festival for the town, which is this big sort of like heritage festival for their town. It's all centered around this legend that they have about the kind of founding of their town. And this is one of those scenes where it kind of gets a little bit surrealist when Mr. Peel admits that he doesn't know much about the particular history of the town. They kind of go into this full sort of enactment, historical reenactment of this story. And it's this, you know, somewhat, for those who pay attention to kind of small town history sorts of things, it's a familiar sounding story of at some point, you know, back in the 1800s, this captain came into town and defended the town against an attack by one of the Sioux tribes in the area, and managed to save this family against all odds and dies in the act of it. And so the kind of heroic image of this cavalry commander who saves this farmer's family and thus founds the town. So we go through that. We hear more and more about this idea that this one council member has around like making this Lincoln exhibit. But there's slowly more and more begins to get sussed out from this conversation particularly. And the wondering emerges is, didn't we talk about this last time? No one can really remember what they talked about last time, whether it was in a committee meeting separately or whether it was at a council meeting. And so Mayor Superba kind of adjourns and asks Miss Johnson to go back and look and see from her notes or just figure out whether they talked about it last time. In this adjournment, Mr. Peel calls Mr. Karp because he still hasn't figured out why Mr. Karp is missing, and tries to get a hold of him, but he gets his answering machine, doesn't get a hold of him, says, can you tell me what's going on? What happened last week? I'm kind of in the dark trying to figure this out, et cetera, et cetera. Another sort of important piece that is sort of brewing along the way is another motion that is brought prior to this that is kind of breezed over, but it's brought about these kind of bicycles that are being impounded by the city. It was Mr. Karp's kind of like flagship thing. So Mr. Karp was kind of in the process of trying to figure out a way that these impounded bicycles could, rather than being sold for profit or something like that, be used to help underprivileged folks or people in need of transportation. So when that motion comes up, Mr. Peel is like, well, I don't really want to vote on this until Mr. Karp is here. And so it's kind of tabled and set aside for later. During the adjournment, Miss Johnson consults her notes and lets Mr. Peel know that she's consulting her notes and kind of hints that there are, in fact, minutes, but the minutes are held back. And so in the kind of after the break, to kind of sum up the kind of explosion that happens, and we'll get into some of the specifics as we talk more, the minutes are read. Mr. Peel manages to get a vote passed to have the minutes read, and Miss Johnson begins to read out the minutes from last time, and we kind of go into another sort of like pseudo reenactment of that time. Mr. Karp becomes a character and comes on stage, and what is illuminated is Mr. Karp has kind of found out that there's some nefariousness in this whole bicycle business. Mr. Azalon is the brother of the sheriff in town, and so the sheriff is like selling the bikes and paying Mr. Azalon to rent a fire truck for the festival in town. Mr. Azalon is charging a whole bunch of money to do that, like more than it would cost to rent a fire engine that he owns, and so there's some like sort of fraud conversation happening in there. But not only that, Mr. Karp has kind of had it out for the Heritage Festival for a while because he's done some research and gotten into the weeds on this sort of historical narrative and discovered that there is a lie there, that in fact it is not this sort of heroic cavalry commander who, you know, resists and manages to save a family, but rather that it's kind of a cover up for what was the kind of army moving into a Sioux tribe's area while a lot of their men were away on a hunt and killing the whole village, and then subsequently bringing all the men who came back to the stocks and to the reservation. So a really, you know, awful story has been swept over with this sort of illuminated narrative, and Mr. Karp is kind of in the business of revealing that, and does so in the process of the city council meeting. So there were fireworks, etc. And to sum it up, to sum up the end of the play, Mr. Peel sort of notes that this is awful. We shouldn't be doing this. What have you done? Also, what have you done to Mr. Karp? I can't get a hold of him. There's lots of sort of veiled threats back and forth between everyone. And eventually it kind of leads to this. You're new in town. Be careful. we teach things this way, and get on board or get out, or we will get you out. Mr. Peel briefly leaves out into the rain, and business tries to proceed for the rest of the council meeting before this sort of like ritual begins. Another sort of surrealist moment, this ritual of kind of beating on chests and a bowl filled with some sort of liquid that could be blood. The stage directions kind of make it a little bit wondering whether or not it is or not. But eventually Mr. Peel comes back in, having been broken essentially by the threats and about wondering what exactly he's going to do if the threats come about, comes back in and joins in this sort of like tribalistic ritual that Mayor Superba is leading to bring about the unity of this council together. Kind of ends on that sort of somewhat disturbing beat after having survived the council meeting.
Yeah. Woof die. So yeah. it's a city council meeting that has this terrible thing that is revealed, and the issue, there's many issues that come up across the course. It's about a 90-minute runtime. It moves really quick. It's very, very funny. But at the core of it is this issue of the story of the town's history. And the story they've told themselves about this famous soldier who heroically fought back a terrible, and I'm just going to use the racist language that the story tells, not my opinion, but just the racist language that the myth is, this heroic white person who fought back this band of savages who showed up in the night to murder everybody and kidnapped a daughter and went out, and this heroic white soldier went out to rescue her and all this. That's the sort of myth of the town. And what is revealed by Mr. Karp at the previous meeting, and then we get an enactment in the transcript, is that the actual history of the town is that, you know, as you can sort of imagine, really, a bunch of white soldiers went in and killed a bunch of Sioux people just indiscriminately. And that became known as this famous battle. And in fact, the name of the town, Big Cherry, is not like a sort of a quaint, beautiful nature reference for this small town, but in fact is a really vile racist slur, because the white people would call the native folks cherry N-words, basically. And that became the name of the town. So it's this terrible, violent, racist history that is uncovered by Mr. Karp and brought to the city council that has been shut down. And that is the thing that Mr. Peel, in this week's city council meeting, is trying to figure out what happened. And, I mean, what I love about that of this play is that, I mean, 8 years ago, and maybe it's just terrible that it's taken this long, I feel like this is really where America, at least like white America, is right now in trying to reckon with the stories that we've told ourselves for hundreds of years about the making of the country and our towns and our schools and our stories, and reckoning with the fact that most of that is not true. I mean, yeah. It's just not really true.
Yeah, and as slowly more and more information is out there for you to engage with, and access to that information becomes more available, there's just more and more that a lot of these, you know, one of the kind of big worries of the city council is that for the last however many years, the like big heritage festival every year is becoming more and more poorly attended, and so the some of the impetus behind Mr. Hanrady's like trying to have this booth where you get to like have a mixed martial arts match with an Abraham Lincoln stand-in, is to try to generate money and interest in the festival. But what they're not addressing is that, you know, and I think pretty broadly, heritage festivals are experiencing this as well, as more information comes out about what these heritage festivals are actually celebrating and how, you know, the access to information shows that there's other things that led, and uncomfortable things, not only uncomfortable, but wrong things, nefarious things that led to kind of foundings of things, that the complicatedness of the interaction of the citizenry with this myth, as they find out that it is not just a myth that is telling a truth, but rather a myth that is covering up something awful is really happening on a broad scale, I think, in a lot of our small towns.
And it's interesting because when you noted that early in the play, the council does this reenactment of the official quote-unquote myth, the soldier who went out in the night and saved this family and rescued this kidnapped daughter, this heroic story. And they do this reenactment very early. And very early, Mr. Peel, who I want to talk about in a second as a kind of, our interlocutor character into this council, but as soon as he hears that story, which he apparently has never heard before, he immediately is like, okay, sure.
Right.
Right. Oh, he had this whole conversation with arrows in his bag.
Right.
This sounds like it's probably not kind of true. And I like that discovery is separate from the discovery of what the real truth is. Because I actually think that that's a really kind of sharp note about American mythmaking. I think a lot of us, if we really thought about it, know that there's some exaggeration, let's say.
Right.
In the stories of American history.
Some embellishment, perhaps.
Right. And we're all, reasonably smart people get that, the pilgrims and the natives, probably didn't have a nice, lovely feast, you know? Right. but with that knowledge that these stories are embellished in some way is somewhat separate and protected from the knowledge that the real truth is much, much worse. Much more violent, much more devastating.
Yeah, and slowly, slowly as America, we're sort of more communally becoming aware of that. And I think this play sort of reflects that slowness of the reveal really well. And controls it so well, and just to kind of tee up what I perhaps you are heading with, the Mr. Peel stuff, does it so well by using Mr. Peel that way. Because not only he's the ideally situated as a character in the context of the play, someone new to town, new on the city council, new to the area of power where someone might interact with these kinds of truths. But also he's immediately, in a time sense, immediately on the outside because he missed out on last week. And so there's all sorts of secrets to be revealed.
Yes, it's so clever by Tracy Letts to have this character that's new twice. I mean, we all know, at least if you've done any story study at all, not just drama, although it's more common in drama and film than in novels, but in novels too, short stories and prose, having a character that doesn't have the information that the audience needs to get is it's as old as time, right? As old as there's been stories. We've had characters who are like, huh, I'm new to town. Can you tell me about all these people in town that the audience needs to know about? That's a classic tool. And Tracy Letts takes that tool and then uses it doubly effective. Because as you noted, Peel is new to the council. He's not from the town. So he's new to the politics of it. He's new to the story of the town. He's a sort of an outsider in that way. So already, great setup for that. But then he's also missed last meeting. So he also doesn't have the information about last meeting that we need to get. Now, here's what's, I think, an interesting question to me. It's something that if I were interviewing Tracy Letts or in a position to have a conversation about the play, I would ask. Why do you think we bother to do the Mr. Peel thing instead of just doing the meeting from last time as the play? Right? Because, you could just have the minutes be the meeting where Mr. Karp discovers all this stuff and brings it up, right? That could be the play. But instead, it's this play about a week later where a totally different character has to figure out what happened.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I love about it being in this moment is that the intrigue is so much higher. Especially it's a well-titled play too, because very early on we figure out that the minutes are not there. There's this secret. There's this thing. We know there's something in the minutes and we need to find them. And then also the absence of Mr. Karp is what's going on here? I don't really understand this. There's all sorts of little veiled comments, the way that Mr. Peel talking about his kids with people slowly turns nefarious is another one of those, like, oh no, like everyone else starts like bringing up his kids. And as slowly the threats become more and less and less, opaque,
Side
and more,
note, there's a great joke early in the play. Mr. Peel's been showing people pictures of his kids, and then he meets Mrs. I think it's Johnson. And he's like, oh, do you have kids? And she's like, yes, I have a daughter. And he's like, do you have any pictures? And she says, I don't think so.
Yeah, nope. Yep. So yeah, the intrigue leads to, I think, an exciting experience, and also one that slowly becomes a little bit thrillery, almost a little bit scary as we find out more and more and more things.
Yeah, there is like an intrigue, I like that word, a suspense, a drama to like, there's something that terrible happened last week and I need to find out what it is. But I also think that this version of the story really puts the focus on Peel, on his decision, what he is going to do with this information, rather than on the group, right? The story of what happened last week is, what is the group going to do with this information that Mr. Karp has brought forward? And that is, I mean, that could be a very interesting story, right? What is the city council going to do with that? But in this play, that's already decided. What these people are going to do with this information was decided last week. It's not an issue in the play. We know what they're going to do with it. We find out in the play. They like throw Mr. Karp into a jail so he can't bring it to the newspaper. And we're just guessing. We don't quite get it. But that's the implication, right? So there is no intrigue, suspense, story about what the council is going to do. The only question then left is what Mr. Peel is going to do. So it takes the question of the play down from a society question to an individual question. And that's not really better or worse in one way or the other. It's just a different story. And Tracy Lett's story is more about, what are we as individual people going to do with the knowledge that the towns that we live in almost universally were founded by tossing indigenous people out of the land that they lived in, by slaughtering them indiscriminately, by forcing them onto almost universally, that's true of American towns. And so what are you as an individual going to do with that information? It's not a question of what the society is going to do. Frankly, the society's already decided. You know?
Yeah.
That's unfortunately sort of the reality that we live in, or at least the reality of the story Tracy Letts is telling. Our question is like, what am I going to do with it? And to me, that's what this this way of telling this story in this week later, like the group, all the stuff about the group happened in the past. Now it's about this guy.
Yeah.
It's about you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and whether like as a new person into places, like as you move into places, this sort of resistance is there. This sort of as soon as Mr. Peel leaves, they go about the process of like, our curriculum is going to move more and more towards learning the quote unquote proper story.
I said this already, but like, the way that this play from more than 8 years ago is able to speak into what's going on right now. I mean, there are states that within the month of this being released have voted on things like, we're not going to teach like the real history of slavery and the forced marches to internment camps and reservations. Like there are states that are literally doing to their education systems. I mean, I won't reveal exactly when this has been recorded, but within several days of this being recorded, a state has banned DEI teachings in their public institutions.
Yeah.
So Tracy Letts predicted this more than 8 years ago. He's like, there's going to be official governments that are like, nope, you're not teaching that anymore.
Yep. Yeah, and in that way, so the question of what will you do when confronted with this is, I mean, it's a really compelling one, and the ending is a really, I don't know, like it's a sad ending, but it's also one that's like, you know, how in some ways, you know, it's in that one, it's almost a compassion exercise for people who have already tried to do that.
Sure.
Seeing what Mr. Peel is threatened with, is scared by, and how he, it's kind of a lesson in, oh, this is how it's, how they're doing this. it's this full court press of this whole group together. And even when someone from the establishment stands up and Mr. Karp is nowhere to be seen anymore the next week. When someone new to the establishment steps in and notes that there's problems, the press of the establishment is so hard against them. So yeah, it is a compelling and worrying and sometimes like prophetic tale that was written at that time.
And there's just so much in it that feels like now. I mean, it really does feel like this could be written last year. There's a whole focus on like the language police in this play that like feels so relevant. One of the things that's great about it is that in terms of like the council, there are people from all sides of the political spectrum on the council. So this is not a play about how the progressives have found out the racist history of their towns and are trying to do something about it. The progressives are part of the problem in this play too. I think that's why the whole sort of subplot, which is relatively disconnected from the rest of the story about Mr. Hanready's fountain. I mean, it's not in that the fountain has a statue of the famous historical soldier and that's what causes the reenactment. But the fountain itself is not – that plot, to me, is more about showing us that even Mr. Hanratty, who is by all accounts a progressive person, who seems to value the things that progressive people, whatever, value about accessibility to people who are disabled – that seems like a very empathetic thing. We should have a wheelchair ramp. We should have something that we can, give people who are disabled access to some of the same stuff that people who aren't disabled have. That's a really empathetic point of view. It's a really empathetic proposal. Seems great, right? And the conservative side of the council are all up in arms about it and how stupid it is and what a waste of money and blah, blah, blah. And that all sounds very familiar, unfortunately. Right. But what's great about it is that at the core of the fountain is this statue of the guy.
Yeah.
So even underneath this progressive, quote unquote, whatever, proposal about inclusion, about standing up for people who are disabled, is this racist reality.
Yep. And there's something compelling about like the levels, like the bait which people try to use to like bring policies that they care a lot about and are good policies, kind of using the bait of and also heritage to try to get it done and still not working. There's also like the relevancy of the like, we just read the minutes. We read the minutes. We not only read the minutes, we read a transcript. We have a transcript because our clerk is so good. We actually have a word for word transcript of what occurred. Look at this evidence. We did something wrong last week and it doesn't matter. Like the group just doesn't like is powerful enough that they can just say, yep, those were read. Next item of business. All of that is very relevant as well.
I love the minutes as the kind of central image of this play. It's titled for that. It's the major item of contention in the play. What happened last week? Well, in a procedural setting, you have a record of what happened last week that you can identify. It's called the minutes, right? And what are the minutes? They're an official history. They're a marker of decision making, and they can be altered, hidden, obfuscated, all of this stuff. And so what to me the minutes become, the minutes, this official record, becomes the same, it becomes the metaphor, the image for the larger town history, right? The actual negotiation over the history of the town. What happened? What's the story we're going to tell? That only lasts for like a page and a half of a 70-some page script. So what, like 4 minutes of a 90-minute play. That the actual negotiation over the history of the town. It starts, it's over very quickly. What goes on across almost the whole play is the negotiation of the minutes, the record, what has been put down. And this is, it's something that needs approval, right? You can't have minutes that become official and put into the town's history unless it's been approved by the council. And you can see how that metaphor, I mean, I think it's just such a sharp metaphor from Tracy Letts to look at this. It's a, they say it in the play, right? Minutes are a boilerplate thing. Like, it's just like, you approve them every meeting. It's whatever. But really, what's in them is crucial. It's the history of the decision-making, of the leadership. And so the same thing to me is like town history, right? If you walk around my town, there's signs all over on fountains, on statues, on trail markers that that have written down this story of the area. And it feels kind of boilerplate. It's like, yeah, you just put that on there. But it's crucial. What's in that? Is that really true?
Right, right. And it's the thing that we're steeping in all the time. So like, so yeah, the critique of wondering whether it actually happened. I think that's why the transcript is a great riff on finding the minutes. You know, we find the minutes and we kind of think that's it. And honestly, in the reading of it, like, this play is very funny, very well acted from the videos that I can see of the Broadway production. And so, like, throughout it, it's an enjoyable show. In the reading of it, I get to the minutes and Miss Johnson is reading the minutes and I'm like, oh, we're just going to sit here for three pages while she reads the minutes? Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, we just found out what happened last week, and Mr. Karp is oh no. but then the riff that we not only have minutes, we have a transcript. And then transcript.
And just so, before you get to the transcript, though, what's in the minutes that Miss Johnson finally reads aloud, the minutes about last week that Mr. Peel's been pushing to find all play, is just that Mr. Karp sort of acknowledged that he doesn't have a very high view of the Heritage Festival anymore, and so he was dismissed from the council. And that's set up by Mrs. Inez's speech early on, where she basically says that the mission of the city council as it's set forward is to the protection, the ongoing support, the management of the Heritage Festival. This is a very small town. That's the most important job of the council. So you can sort of see that in the official record of the town, the minutes, Mr. Karp did not do his job. As a city council person, his job is to whatever, like support the ongoing success of the Heritage Festival. And in the official record, he says he doesn't like the Heritage Festival anymore, and so he's dismissed. And again, it's just boilerplate. It's just the minutes, right? You approve them. Yes, that is what happened last time. Oh, but what's actually there? What's behind that? What's in the minutes? And thus we get the transcript.
Yeah, there's some interesting, like, detective work that's done around abbreviations and Latin, and so there's kind of this exciting sparks fly as more and more information is revealed, and we get a transcript, and that transcript from a play structure format, I just love this, is not just a reading of the transcript, it's here in the really juicy moment when we finally get as true an account of the past as we're ever going to get, that we get a full enactment, a suddenly lights flicker and we're back a week ago. Mr. Karp is there and it's the actual moment that we get to dig into.
And I love the connection there, because what Mr. Karp reveals in the transcript is that he's gone back and gotten an oral history from the granddaughter, I think, of someone who was actually there at the slaughter. And so I think that there's a connection being made between an account of someone who was there in terms of the transcript of that is presented in the minutes, in terms of connecting the minutes as a metaphor with the larger story of the town. And then the thing that Mr. Karp reveals is not quite a transcript, but it's an account of someone who was there, as much as we can get it through oral history passed down through the generations. And so I just, that's so sharp to me. The other thing that's really sharp, and that I think is, I found weird even on my first reading of the play, and weirder in subsequent readings, about like how many little things are going wrong with this city council, right? It's like the lights are flickering on and off. There's a problem with the power generator. And it's just kind of the world of the play throughout. The lights flicker, they go off at different points. And Mr. Peel, of course, the new person, yes, of course, is the only one to really notice or care. Everybody else is used to it. Then there's other things. They've got an ant problem that nobody ever, like, talks about or deals with. But at different points, like, members of the council are, like, bitten by ants. There's no, like, that doesn't become a thing. It's just, like, part of it. And then there's other things. They mispronounce words all the time. Just, like, across the board. Somebody will say something, people are like, that's not how you pronounce that. And then they just move on. They miscommunicate all the time. They try to say one thing, and then somebody will go, I have no idea what you're talking about. That doesn't mean anything to me. Or they'll totally misunderstand it. You know, like, there's this whole negotiation around Oldfield, like, not even understanding what the posters that Mr. Hanratty has created are. Like, are these real? Are they a draw? What is going on? Doesn't get it. Like, there's this weird thing where in the minutes of the last meeting, the mayor makes this proclamation that, like, whatever, November is this is not quite right, but November is, like, eye protection month. And the idea is that this proclamation is given in honor of this eye doctor in town. But in the minutes notes, it's like, the eye doctor wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I didn't, like, receive the proclamation. So there's just, like, this fabric in this world of, like, things don't work quite right.
Yep. Which is, like, both kind of, like, a little bit of a warning, some foreshadowing, perhaps, in addition to just the way, like, cities work. Anyone has...
It did occur to me after hearing the Tracy Letts interviews how much of that stuff came from real city council meetings.
Yeah. We did this really honorific thing, and, well, the person we were honoring didn't show up.
Isn't that great? I mean, I don't know. I don't have any secret insight. I have to believe that is straight out of a real city council meeting. I just have to believe that. That's so perfect.
For sure. Yeah. And because you're taking minutes, you know, these things get noted. It gets noted, you know, that so-and-so brings up an actual talking point about we have an ant problem in the building. And so, it's simultaneously like a look into the way that city government works. And, you know, thank you to Tracy Letts for like sitting through that much council meeting minutes to kind of show that. But also a really deep look into more what is underneath cities as more and more information comes out and what's going on in America's knowledge base and consciousness and leadership base as more and more information is emerging.
No, totally. And just like the fact that they can ignore it to me is part of it too, right? Everybody just ignores the lights flickering. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
To anybody except Peel. They mention the ants problem, but they don't like... They don't even do anything about it in the immediate moment. It's not like, hey, there's biting ants in this room. Let's have this meeting in a different room.
Different room?
You know? Let's can we just like get some ant spray and like it won't solve the problem in the long run, but at least tonight we won't get bitten by ants. Just nobody knows anything about it. They mispronounce words. Somebody will say that was mispronounced, and they just move on. They don't
correct
the pronunciation. So the ability of these people to ignore small problems, to me, demonstrates their ability to ignore big problems. And I'm saying they, but what this play is about is us.
Yeah.
And I just think that is so... to me at least, like I empathize with that. Like my ability to ignore small problems is in some days I'd say that's a strength of mine. And then other days it's like, boy, I've ignored that small problem for too long.
A little too
now,
long.
It's a big problem.
Yep.
I probably should have dealt with that a long time ago. So like I really feel that as a human thing. Like, I got bit by an ant. I'll deal with that a different day. And then a different day, it's like, now the ants are everywhere. Shoot, I should have solved that problem a long time ago.
Right, when it was a $5 fix. Now
yes, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely indicative of bigger systemic issues. We're coming down to the end of our time with this play, but there's so many great moments, so many great individual kind of comedic bits, such great juxtaposition. The like this city runs on a top line, and then it's subsequently followed by one of the lights flickering.
I know.
There's so many good moments like that in this show. Great to have the chance to have chatted about it. And excited for people to have the chance to see it too, as more and more of it hits the road. You said there was like a number of them coming up really soon, so maybe I'm gonna check and see if there's a play
this year. I mean, I do think I know it seems like if you're not part of the theater world, something that happened 2 years ago feels like it might be a long time ago. For this to have a Broadway run 2 years ago is just not that long ago in like theater time. And so it's just starting now to be done in other places. And so I think that you'll have the opportunity to see this play in the coming years. My sense is that a lot of people are going to do this play. That if we were doing this episode 4 years from now, I'd be able to do one of those lists that I love to do where I just name theaters for like 4 minutes straight. That's my sense of it. I could be wrong. It is a large cast, and that is a challenge. Large cast plays are not very popular anymore because they're very expensive to produce. I mean, there's 11 people in this cast. That's large. On the other side, it's not very technically complicated, so that's a benefit of the play. Mm-hmm. But it's so, so relevant. It's so smart. It speaks so deftly into our situation right now. And for that, I think that you'll see theaters do it.
Yeah, especially this year. It'll just be interesting to see how many of them crop up in an election year.
And what happens in November of this year might determine where this play goes to some degree.
Absolutely. So if you are interacting with this play in any of those ways, as we believe that it'll be around, whether you're watching it, whether you're in it, whether you're just reading it after this conversation, or if you've been in it before, seen it before, we'd love to keep chatting with you about the minutes. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or X at the username at NoScriptPodcast. We also have a Gmail, NoScriptPodcast@gmail.com. Find us on any of those sites. We'd love to be chatting about this play more with you and to be fostering a place where people can chat about plays. So find us there. We'll love to chat about this play with you.
Absolutely. If you've enjoyed this conversation, if you enjoyed our other conversations this season or across our 12 seasons now, amazing, of episodes, we've got literally hundreds of conversations about plays out there. If you like this show for that, recommend us to your family, your friends, anybody you know that likes storytelling, theater, drama, acting, conversations about themes and characters and structures and that kind of stuff. Send them our way. I think they'll like the show. They can find us at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, all the places that you find your podcasts. That's where we are. You can also like the Facebook page where a link to the new episode appears every Monday when we publish. And we'll be back next Monday with another episode about another great script. Until then, that's Jackson. I'm Jacob. You've been listening to No Script, the podcast.